Right. Thank you, everyone, for attending. This is the mathematics overview. I used to call it every year in ELA. We would call it the mathematics or the ELA update. And the boss says, you know, that kind of implies that there's going to be something new and people are going to come expecting something brand new. So let's call it overview. As Andy Middlestead presented earlier, it's pretty much the same old. Not much has changed. And since we have such a small... Oh, I'm Kyle Ward, sorry, Michigan Department of Education, math consultant. Holly Trotter, DRC. Holly's been tolerating me for 13 years. And I told her just now that I'm glad that this year is the 66th anniversary of the meeting. And hopefully by next year, that whole 67 thing will have died down. Now, since we have a small group, and we're probably going to finish early, I know people... Hate to hear that. Let's go around the room. We'll start here. Just your job title and where you work. Sorry.
I'm Michelle. I'm a Q12 math and
We haven't scared her off yet, so. Someone having more than one role at a school system, that's very unusual, right? I noticed the veterans sit closer so they can give us a harder time. Okay.
Here we go. Well, thanks everybody for coming and for introducing yourselves. And you walked in after we started. I think you want to tell us what your name is. Sorry. Yeah.
Charles Winter, Assessment Coordinator, Channel Park.
Thank you.
So much.
Great. Okay, here we go. There's just the overview of the slides for later on. Oh, wait, no, it's over the program. The slides are coming up next. So this will be ELMBA, or was we in the office say, we say K2, MSTEP, MME. This is all the assessments. I'm sure you've heard of them. WIDA, MyAccess. It's antiquated. I shouldn't say work keys, right?
Yeah.
Got to change this. Is this thing going to work? Yeah, here. Okay. As long as my jokes outnumber my mistakes, I'm good. Again, just the slide numbers for later on. I had suggested to Holly that she do all the slides and I'll do the last slide, but she didn't. She didn't go for it. No. Okay. Here's the testing window. So just like as mirrors last year, April 6th to May 15th. So here's my red line. M-step paper pencil. We're down to, I don't know, about 1%, I would say, for the paper pencil testing. My access, PSAT, so all there in April, with the exception of the WIDA access. All right, okay. We got rid of the performance tests years ago, so this is our blueprints, so 19 to 20 items for concepts and procedures, claim one, that's the bulk. Problem solving, 3 to 5 items, reasoning, 7 to 9, and modeling and data analysis, 4 to 6. And because of the small numbers, claims 2 and 4 are reported together.
And if you ask afterwards, the links that you'll see on some of these slides, it just will bring you to the exact location on the Michigan Department of Education website where you can also look at this screenshot. So there's a lot of links on a lot of slides. That's what they're there for.
Crosswalks that link the claim to the critical areas, the various targets, and then the standards. Again, this is just one sample. There's the link for the entire crosswalk document. I'm 1 to 9. I'm still on my part, right, Holly? 1 to 15. Okay, so we have the designated supports, masking, that's when you enlarge a large black box if a student wants to cover something else, text-to-speech. We used to, it's called Voice of James. It used to be called Voice of?
David.
And David was much more synthetic-y.
Yeah,
next. And we have a new voice, which is the
Francisco
for the Stack Spanish.
Probably the one new thing, and we'll address it later, but that's probably the one biggest change in the MAP MSTEP assessment this year is that the Stack Spanish assessment formerly had HEA, so it's just a recording of somebody reading the Spanish portion of the item. This year it will be text-to-speech, but it is the voice of Francisco, and he actually sounds pretty good.
It does sound pretty good. I didn't realize. Yeah. I thought for a minute he might have been real.
Yeah.
Right. And like the voice of James, it defaults to the medium speed, and you can go much faster or much, much slower. If you go super slow on the voice of James, it sounds like he's not well.
Yeah. I don't recommend that.
And then we have the Arabic glossing, Spanish glossing. That's where the words will have a bunch of dots above or below them, and you click on that, and then it could pop up for in Spanish or Arabic. So,
and then over here, again, this link isn't to the Michigan Department of Education website. It is to the DRC portal where you can access the OGTs and sample item sets. So I am just showing you, again, where you can even look at more information and some sample items for those questions.
Does that have to be assigned?
It is. It has to be specifically designated for the student, yes.
Okay, so there's an example of your masking here. And then here your color preferences. The default is black and white. You can do black on light blue or purple on green. I much prefer the black on blue. The purple on green is a bit much for me. Oh. All right, where are we at, 10? So there's your text-to-speech. So you hit your settings here, and you get the volume and the speed. Can't speed up the HVA on the K and 1 and 2, but on K and 1, but on 2 through 7, you can speed up the, how did that happen? Speed up the text-to-speech, some ideal speed. If you go super slow, well, it takes you longer to get through the item. If you max it, then it's not very easy to follow, so. Mm-hmm. Defaults to the dead center. This is a I feel like I'm getting, I've seen some of these folks so many times, I feel like I'm getting to know some of them. Yeah, they're old friends, yes. And you get to actually kind of know their personality, the way they sign. And so you'll get your item. Oh, come on, Mr. Pointer. There we go. And then you click on the ESL, the two hands, and you'll get this pop-up. And you can play it as many times as you want. There used to be a volume part there. That was part of an old template. We got rid of that since there's no volume on the VSL. Yes. But it's actually, since you've seen so many videos, I know very little sign language, but most of it is mathematics based. I can do coordinate table, fractions. There's which versus what? Which is one, which and what? And okay, stack Spanish. Okay, here's your right here. New for stack Spanish, TTS instead of all right. That's the voice of Francisco. And there's the follow along option. You can shut it off, or you can have the
follow. Now that the stack Spanish is TTS instead of HBA, it does have the follow along functionality.
And that's optional. You can shut that off if you like.
And by follow along functionality, just the blue highlighting where the highlighting adds the words are being read.
Right. Clicker. 14 Arabic. And so here's an example of the glossing. You have the word with dots above and below it, and you click on it, and you'll get a pop-up. Now, if the word is repeated 5 times, it's only going to pop up that word once, so there's no need to have 5 translations of the same word. But even if it's plural, you'll get a different pop-up. And then in Spanish, same thing.
Of course, as you can see, the indication of which words or phrases are glossed is these little dots above and below. Not every single word is going to have a glossing definition. Most items just have a handful. The indication is the dots.
Don't forget your mic.
It's not working.
Oh, okay. I'll just stand closer to you then.
I can talk.
Okay. Oh, 15.
That's me anyway.
Handing it off, right.
For the TTS, you know, that's a really good question because the TTS for students taking just the regular English portion is not a designated support. It's a universal support, I think, right? It is designated. Okay, so then. All right, so like the administrator has to specifically say which kids need TTS?
Yes.
Okay, in that case, then it would be the same for the stacked Spanish. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that, but that would be my best guess. Again, it's the one new thing this year. I know, John. Yeah, bang on the wall.
He doesn't. He has me to ask.
Oh.
Okay. Okay, well, I will. That's a good question. My guess, again, is that it would be, it would work the same way it does for the all English forms, but there could be different rules for stack Spanish. Yeah, Jen Paul probably would know. Is she here today? Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I'm just going to go through a few slides of what the interface looks like. We made a big deal about it last year because the look of the Insight platform changed a little bit for last school year. It looks the same for this school year, but for those of you who weren't able to check out the changes last year, just a little overview. The buttons have kind of shifted around on the screen. Some of these tool buttons used to be in the middle. Probably the biggest change is that the next and back buttons used to be like down here on the right-hand corner. So things, all of the same functionality exists. The items function the same way, and honestly, the portion of the item that contains the actual test question, Looks exactly the same, just the buttons are in some different places. So speaking of the tools, we still have a highlighter tool, we have a sticky note tool, we have a magnifier tool, and this is the line guide tool. So the sticky note tool is now called Notepad, but it works the same way, and students can open one up, and it's basically just like a text box, and they can type whatever they want to type, and it's right there on the page for them. So this would be handy for kids who like to kind of record their thought process. It's just an alternative to scratch paper, essentially. It's the electronic scratch paper for them. Sorry. All right, let's see. With the new Insight that we got starting last school year, there were actually more magnification levels. I think previously it just maybe was 1.5 and 2. So now we can magnify all the way up to 4 times. It's very exciting if you really, really want to like look at some letters really closely. And the highlighter, you know, works like a highlighter works. And the students can highlight any part of the text of the item. Unfortunately, if there's like text inside of a graphic, graphics and elements like that are not highlightable. But if it's just regular item text, the students can highlight whatever they want to highlight, or they can erase highlighting that they have already done. Oh, and the highlighter color, big news, it changed from blue to pink. You might want to warn your students about that new color. Okay, and then we have this review and test feature. Now, this is only a feature for fixed forms. The general ed population, as you guys know, who are taking MSTEP, it is a computer adaptive test. So when they get to the last question, they just get a little blurb that says, congratulations, you finished your test. They don't have this opportunity to go back to items that they might have skipped or missed. However, if you are taking a fixed form, so any of the any of the accommodated forms, those are all fixed forms. So if you're taking the STAC Spanish translation form, the DSL form, any of the glossing forms, those are fixed forms, which means that the students can control their navigation. They don't have to answer the question before they can move on. And therefore, they can use some of these tools. They can flag questions, which will show up like this when they get to the review and test page. And best of all, they get indications for questions that have been unanswered. So if they see that a question has been unanswered, they can just click right there on the link and it will navigate them right back to that question. So for your students who are taking fixed forms, there are some handy things about this page. So I would recommend that you make sure they're familiar with it because it might help them.
Now, one improvement we did do from the K2 was that you got a non-scorable workspace and then you got the scorable part. And it used to be that if you didn't fill in the workspace, it would say that you didn't finish the item. So we got feedback in the field and we updated that a couple years ago.
Yep. All right, so calculators are a big deal when it comes to the math tests. The calculators are only available at grades 6 and 7. Grades 3 through 5 items are all non-calculator. Again, that's how it's always been. That's no change. And we are still using the Desmos calculators. So at grade 6, they get the Desmos basic calculator, which looks like this. They got a square root button, a fraction button, and then your operations and your numbers. Pretty basic, hence the name. At grade 7, for items that are calculator items, they will get the scientific calculator, still a Desmos calculator. Offers a few more buttons and a few more functions there. It is very important for students to be familiar with this calculator. Hopefully, the reason that we switched to Desmos is because we know that many classrooms are using Desmos in their classroom. So hopefully, if you are doing that with your students, they are already familiar with kind of the Desmos interface. But there are a couple of opportunities to make sure that they can really practice with this calculator and become comfortable with it prior to taking the test. One is right here. Again, if you navigate to the DRC portal to where you would go to get the sample item sets, we have a special OTT, it's not really a sample, I guess, specifically for calculator practice. So if you click on that, you literally will get kind of just like an open playing field. An item will come up, and the students can click on the calculator and check it out and play with it. And the settings of the calculator will mimic all of the same settings and restrictions that they will have on the MSTEP assessment. Furthermore, I don't have it on the slide here, but if you go to desmos.com/testing, Desmos does a really nice job of linking you to the exact testing calculator that each different state uses. So you can click on the state of Michigan, and there's a PDF that, again, outlines which grades the calculator gets used for. And you can also practice with the actual Michigan testing calculator right there on desmos.com/testing. Now, when I say, like, the actual Michigan calculator as opposed to Desmos calculator, the reason that is because there are some restrictions that just kind of a basic or default, I should say, the default Desmos calculator does some more things. I think, like, for instance, one thing that the default Desmos calculator will do is, I think if you type in a fraction, it will, like, automatically change it to a decimal or something like that. For good reasons, most folks who are, you know, giving this kind of assessment didn't want things like that. So each state or whoever uses Desmos might kind of configure it a little bit differently. We are matching the configurations for Smarter Balance. But just, you know, there will be slight differences between the default Desmos calculator that you could potentially be using in the classroom and the actual testing calculator. So they're going to look the same. There just might be some restrictions. Okay? And again, if you want to check those out and really make sure your students are comfortable with them, I really recommend either going here or to desmos.com/testing.
Two things. One is that it gives you the answer in real time, so as you type in more and more operations, it will change over there on the right. And second, on the calculator on the left, you can see that it does follow the order of operations. That's the feedback we got from the previous calculator.
Yes, yes.
Not too thrilled about, but now it does honor the order of operations.
All right. So I'm going to go through the different item types on the MSTEP assessment. Again, there are no new item types. These are all hopefully familiar. We've got multiple choice, multi-select, keypad input, matching table, drag and drop, drop down, hotspot, line plot, table input, coordinate graphing, and number line graphing. Never a boring day when we were writing math questions. Lots of different item types there. All right, so these are sample items, and these are just screenshots of items that are on the sample item sets, publicly available on the Michigan Department of Education, on the DRC portal, which you can access through the Michigan Department of Education website. But this is just to give you an example of what some of these different item types would look like. Multiple choice, you guys know what that's all about. If it's a true multiple choice item, then it will just have, I was going to say it would just have four answer options and one correct, but that's actually not true. There are a very small number of Smarter Balance multiple choice items that have, I think, five answer options. The big thing with multiple choice is it's just one correct. You can choose one option. And we see the little letters and the bubbles there. That's kind of the visual cue that this is a single select item. Okay. Now here's multiple select. So it looks very, very similar to multiple choice. We get the bubbles. However, there are no letters in these bubbles. That, again, is intentional. We wanted there to be a more visual distinction between items where the student is expected to select one versus items where the student is expected to select more than one. A lot of math items will say just to select all, in which case the student, if they wanted to, could select every single bubble. Newer items that are getting added to this pool are tending to say select the two or select the three. So there will be a mixture of both kinds. Obviously, it's important for the students to read the directions. If it is a select two or a select three, then there is functionality that if the student tries to select too many, they'll get a pop-up message that says, you've already hit your maximum selection. So, but in an item like this, they would not get that pop-up message. It says select all, so they could select all of them if they wanted to.
But it's a heads up, it will let you go on. If you ask for two and you only select one, you'll get that dark arrow to let you move on.
Yes.
So
yep.
Be cautious about that.
Yep. All right, keypad input. These are essentially the open response or short answer items. We call them keypad input because there's literally a keypad, some buttons right there on the computer screen that the student can use to type in their answer. So students can just press the buttons here on the keypad to get the numbers or to get like the fraction construct, or they can use their keyboard. They can use their keyboard to also enter in any of these symbols as long as they are buttons that are visible here on the keypad. So for instance, the student could definitely use their keyboard, and if they type the number 2 on their keyboard, that 2 is going to show up here because the 2 is here. I believe it works for X.
It does.
So if, I think even if they type an X or a Y, because those buttons are available for this item here, they could just use their keyboard to type in those. They don't have to actually press this button. Over here, however, because we don't see variables in this keypad, if a student tried to type in X or Y on their keyboard, it would not let them enter it. There's nothing here. So they can use the keyboard as long as the button that they want to use on the keyboard is also one of the options here. Obviously, things like this, the fraction button, there is no keyboard parallel, I guess, with that. So if they want to input a fraction, they're going to have to actually come and press this fraction button. And obviously, just as illustrated here, these are configurable, so if it's an item where it's just asking for a single number, we're not going to offer them all the bells and whistles and all the variables and all the operators and all the other stuff. We're just going to give them the numbers, and depending on the grade level and or the item, obviously this one needs the fraction construct, okay? Here, find the constant of proportionality. Using that, enter an equation in the form y equals rx. Well, then we need to make sure that we have y and x available. And because they're entering an equation, we have to make sure that we have the equal sign available and the operators. So this will be configurable based on what the item is asking. All right, this is a matching table item. It gets used frequently in both ELA and math. It's basically side-by-side matching. You know, if you can imagine when you were a kid and you had stuff in the left column and stuff in the right column and you had circle and you draw a line to connect, that's really what this is. It's just in a different format. Instead of a left side and a right side and lines, we have rows and we have columns. So if we want to match up a row header with a column header, we check the checkbox that matches those. I just got big fat sum, I guess. We understand that this item type is maybe like, if it's just the first time you put an item like this in front of a student, it may not be so super intuitive, but hopefully if you are using your resources and using the OTTs, the students will start to become familiar with this item, actually as early as grade 2, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. The number of rows and columns is completely configurable and will vary from item to item. This particular item is just a true-false. They can either select true or they could select false, and it will usually toggle back and forth, but we can see this match table used in a variety of different ways. You know, we could have any number of column headers and any number of row headers, and we can have more than one thing per row be selectable, more than one thing per column be selectable, so pretty configurable. All right, this is a drag and drop item. It's one of our technology-enhanced item types, and it is just as it sounds. The student is dragging something around the screen and putting it in a specific location on the screen to input their answer. As you probably have seen and can imagine, this also is an item type. The item type is drag and drop, but it can get used in a multitude of different ways. Here, in this particular example, the students are dragging numbers into these fraction boxes to complete the equation. Sometimes drag and drop items are dragging words or numbers to complete a sentence. Sometimes we use drag and drop for the student to actually construct an equation or construct an expression. Lots of different usages, but the functionality, of course, is always the same.
In this part, there's a part A and part B, but there's just one answer box. If you hit part A and part B, two answer boxes, the system won't let you go on unless you put at least one value in there. In this case, since it's just a blue line, if you just put in one value here,
it will let you go on.
So again, just a heads up.
Yeah, thanks for that. Those of you who have seen me give the presentation for item writings and item reviews, I always harp on the fact that when we talk about draggable objects, we've got two different kinds. We've got objects that will regenerate, which means there's more than one copy of that. So in an item like this, these are all regenerating, and that's intentional, right? Because we want to give the student the option to use one of the same numbers up here as they're going to use down here. Or, even though they would get it wrong, we would want to give them the opportunity to, you know, say 2 over 2 or what have you. So, you know, there's a logical basis for that decision making. Of course, there are other drag and drop items where the drag objects are non-regenerating genes. You just get one copy of that, and if you move it from this part of the screen over to some other part of the screen, you don't see it anymore. There's no more copies to drag. Okay, just nitty-gritty stuff. All right, this is a drop-down menu item. These are a couple of examples here. Again, pretty self-explanatory. The student will click on this little arrow. Obviously, these numbers will not be in there. I've answered the question. This will start out by just looking like a blank rectangle with that little down arrow. You click that down arrow, and then your menu will open up, and the student can click on anything in the menu, and then it will populate in the box. So for this example, we're using this drop-down functionality to create an expression. Down here, this drop-down functionality is used just to complete an inequality, right? And as you can imagine, drop-downs could also get used to complete sentences. Those are probably the most common uses of drop-downs.
Some states call this inline choice.
Inline choice, okay. We can go with that. Yeah. All right, hotspot. Hotspot are basically just items where the student is clicking somewhere on the screen to respond. They're a lot like multiple choice items. The only difference is that instead of clicking a bubble, which is representative of the answer, the student will just be clicking the answer itself or the thing that gets them to the answer. In this case, there are six equations. And the student is asked to choose all of the equations that represent this problem. So if they click on this equation, a box appears around it. There are boxes around these because these ones were clicked. If they click it again, the box will disappear. Again, hotspots can be used in lots of different ways, but they all have that common functionality of the student is clicking something on the screen, some kind of indicator is happening to show that the student has. Line plot. There are a small number of standards in the curriculum that require creation of line plots or interpretation of line plots. So we actually do have an item type that allows students to pretty easily create a line plot. This is another one of those item types that is a little, maybe not so intuitive for students. So this is another reason right here, line plot items, why those online tools training and sample items are so important. The students can practice with all of these different item types. They're all represented there. And you really want to make sure that they have that opportunity before going into the exam. The way that this line plot functionality works is that the student just clicks anywhere above the number line to get an X to appear. So one click got that X to appear. And then if I went up here and I clicked again, I would see a second X. And if I went up here and I clicked again, I would see a third X. So just kind of wherever you want the X, you got to click above the number line. But when it just starts out and it's just blank and there's no buttons and there's no tools, you can imagine that some students will be like, where's my X? How do I do this? So you just got to click above the number line and then the X will start to appear. And then it's pretty easy to manage. And then there are table input items, which are very similar to keypad input items, except there's no keypad. So here the student has to use their keyboard in order to enter in these numbers. So with this item type, we tend to only see them as part of tables where students are completing an empty cell or empty cells in a table. There are restrictions put in place for these areas too. So because the student has to use their keyboard, there are obviously lots of buttons on that keyboard that we would not want them entering or using, or would be nonsense answers. So if a student, for an item like this, if they try to enter a letter or try to enter a symbol, or even like a plus sign, if the answer requires just a number, we're gonna restrict it as much as possible so that students can only just enter numbers. So just something to watch out for that, students might get frustrated if they're trying to put something in and it keeps saying incorrect character. Well, it's because the only buttons they're allowed to use or the only keys they're allowed to type in are keys that they need to answer the question.
And unlike the select two or the draggables, this one will not let you go on unless you fill up something in each of the boxes, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that is true. So with this, because we've got separate answer boxes, the system does know if the student has just put in one of these numbers or put in all four. So in this item, like Kyle just said, they have to put a number into all four of these cells in order for them to be able to fill them.
And when I try to put 87 numbers in there, it doesn't matter.
No, I think that usually the limit is 10, some of them are 5. So we also restrict the number of characters the student can enter in there, because some students will just, you know, press down the button and just let it go on forever, and that's what they're going to do during the test, so they can't do that. All right, coordinate plane graphing is, as it sounds, it is an opportunity for students to use a coordinate grid. Notice that in this example, this particular one, we're using this sort of coordinate grid, but really we're using it just to draw, to kind of create some to create shapes with specific specifications here. So there's a closed point tool, there's a line segment tool. You click on the closed point tool, you click where you want to plot the point, and then once you have two points plotted, you click the line segment tool, and then it will easily draw that line segment in between those points. And then, of course, as you can imagine, we will use the same coordinate graph interface for actual coordinate graph uses, so there will be numbers on the axes, and you could also use it to have students plot specific points or what have you. This is another one that we have, just like with the calculator, we have a special OTT devoted specifically to working with this interaction. It's so the student is basically just going to get a blank slate here, and we are going to offer them all, because there's other tools that we could offer depending on the item. So I'm pretty sure that in this graphing practice, we offer all of the different tools. So it truly is so the student can play, but it's so that they can play to really become comfortable using that item type. And number line graphing, okay, very similar to coordinate graphing, except it's just a number line. But again, we can configure which tools they're being given. Generally, we try to restrict the tools to just those that they need to answer the question. Yeah. Oh, and I do believe that our graphing practice, actually, it has the coordinate graph and it has a number line, so they can practice with both of them. And as I have been referencing over and over and over again, and I will continue to do so, please practice with the OTTs. OTT stands for online tools training. You might also think of them as the sample items, but they really are important. There's a lot of good nuggets in here. Not only are the students getting sample items that are related to the content and the grade level, but they have the opportunity to see all of the different item types, familiar with all those different item types, and all of the different designated supports and accommodations.
You beat me to it. I was going to mention that.
Yep. And then if that is not enough, if you want even more, these tutorials have lots. These tend to get overlooked, but
right.
There's a lot of information in these tutorials. You'll get a whole big window like this. And it goes through all kinds of things. Signing into the test, pausing and exiting, basic tools navigate, protractor, how to create netted equations. So again, lots of really good detailed information here in these student tutorials. So any students that, or educators or leaders that you want to have an even better, deeper understanding of the test, I would definitely recommend checking those out. And I believe, back to you. Okay.
When I ask who's heard of the OTTs, all the hands go up, and I'm going to ask who's heard of the videos.
Are some of them are the student
voice, right?
I think the K2 tutorial
K2, okay.
Is actually a student who child who narrates them.
Right, and then we had to do an upgrade, and then we had
the same girl.
Searching found the same girl. Okay, benchmark assessments, as we say in the office, K2. Okay, color graphics, no scrolling. Scrolling is not permitted in K2. That's a lot of feedback from the field. Look and feel of a computer game. We've done research, the male versus female voice, and they like both. Again, you can speed up the text-to-speech, but you can't speed up the HVA, human voice audio, and it's not a designated support. It's with every item.
Except at grade two.
Except at grade two, correct.
Yeah.
You've jinxed it. For K and one, it's all HVA.
So for kindergartners and first graders taking this benchmark assessment, they don't have to get specifically signed up for audio. It will be a universal support for all kindergartners and first graders. It's just at grade two, where if they need that text-to-speech accommodation, then it will have to be set up as a designated support.
Now, for the first few years, we didn't have the text-to-speech for grade two. That, well, it's going to help us align with grade three, which has a text-to-speech. So yet another reason why you should use our K2s and the smarter interims, because they line up perfectly. Okay.
And when this, sorry.
Go back.
I was just going to address this. When this program first started, we did not have this vertical alignment with grade three MSEP. It obviously took a few years for us to get enough data and to be able to crunch the numbers and work that out. But now the ELMBA assessment has been around long enough to see many name changes and a vertical alignment with grade three MSEP. So on your student reports for anybody taking this K2 assessment, I believe that there's some kind of indicator or predictor about how that student, given their performance on the K2 assessment, this is how we would predict your student to perform on grade three MSEP. So that's pretty nice. Again, if you're in a district who is just trying to figure out with a K2 benchmark assessment,
to take us a
definite plus for this one.
Okay, there's pretty much the same windows. Times are the same. These are suggestions, of course. And then, but I hear a rumor spring might start in 6 or 8 months. So April to May 29th. You can pick and choose just math, just ELA, just first grade. But of course, we'd like you to take it all three times, both content areas. You get the best information that way. Correct. And you can take them on the same day. You don't have to take them in the same day. Okay, here's the blueprint for nothing's changed for the claims. That should be, we don't have the link, but that's out there as well.
Oh, yeah.
For the first few years, we had the reports weren't as useful as they are, because we had performance level descriptors and standard setting, which you do when you develop a new assessment or have a change in the assessment. And that's, so now we can give the scale scores, and it's much more valuable information for the field. And those PLDs, performance level descriptors, are still up there.
Yep. And when we were, so the performance level descriptors, I don't know if I have a snapshot of them on the next page, but the performance level descriptors, yeah, there they are.
It's me, Holly, come on.
Yeah, of course. You're good. They look like this. This is just a sample from grade two operations and algebraic thinking. These are interesting documents. Sometimes you'll hear them called ALDs, achievement level descriptors, or PLDs, performance level descriptors. They're actually very useful documents and very important documents that hardly ever get noticed and hardly ever get seen or used by anyone, just because really the kind of mechanical purpose for them is in order to conduct a standard setting. And as Kyle just said, we only conduct standard settings when tests are new usually, so it just doesn't happen very often. So we were really lucky to be able to develop these performance level descriptors with Michigan teachers. I think in 2022, so a few years back, we came together with a committee of Michigan teachers and really parsed this stuff out. And what's nice is it goes through each and every standard and sort of scaffolds between our three performance levels. And we got the feedback of the teachers who were in that committee. They were just like, these are great. Like, I want these. This will help my instruction so much. This will help us to write items. So they were really impressing upon us the value of this document when generally they get overlooked. They are publicly available. The link was on the previous slide. If you're not taking the ELMBA assessment, just if you are a K2 teacher or if you work with K2 teachers, this is a really nice way to deep dive into that content. and see kind of how it matches up with the different performance levels. So I just wanted you to know that those are out there and available for you to look at.
Okay. Item type, similar to, fewer, drag and drop, hotspot, choices for grade two only, line plots for grade two only, matching table is for grade two only. Drag and drop, so this one is one where it makes sense to regenerate. Hotspot. So again, heads up, if you only chose one, well, you can always go on. So in case you can always go back to an item. So if they've chosen one, wait, I'm supposed to choose nine, go back. Because it's a fixed form and not a,
yep,
not a cat.
Are fixed forms.
Maybe one day we'll have enough items to have a cat. Yeah, we have 1,300 items or something like that between math and ELA. Okay, this is a good example of a workspace that doesn't get scored, but helps you get the answer. So if the student says, well, they put the first row in, well, obviously I get four more, and they didn't finish that. Well, it's not going to count against them at the end. It's just whether they got the 10 there or not. Choice, right? Just let you choose one, unless it specifically asks. Will that be multiple?
Choice will get you, we tend to use the choice interaction as both multiple choice and multiple select. It's just the nature of how these item types are in the Michigan item bank system. So at grade two, and we only use this item type at grade two, and we use it specifically at grade two so that students start to get familiar with the idea of selecting bubbles, because of course in grade three, they're gonna have bubbles all over the place, but we can configure it so that they can select just one, or they can select more than one. In this case, it would just be one. And if they're only supposed to select one answer, they're only gonna be able to choose one. So if they tried to select 28 blocks as well, this would unshade and that would shade.
Line plot. Now, some items start from scratch. Others will have some static X's there that you add on to.
But there's a specific grade 2 standard that is really all about creating line plots. So that is why we see this item type in grade 2. But again, if it's not very intuitive, even for the older kids, it's especially not intuitive, we understand, for the grade 2 students. So probably almost for this item type and the matching table item type alone, it's so worth it to make sure you are doing these online tools trainings, especially with the littles, so that they know what they're supposed to do when they see a number line on the screen and they're asked to create a line plot.
Matching table. Now, some matching tables, behind the scenes, it'll say multiple, single select, multiple select. The student won't see that. Well, here it makes sense that it's a single select. This quarter to five is just going to be 1 clock. But sometimes if you're doing, say, characteristics of a polygon, you might need to check several of the boxes. This is so 1-to-1, and so if I selected on this guy here, then let's see, this one would.
Then I think
both of these would disappear, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I picked the hardest one, right? Okay. Again, we have.
Conveniently, the OTTs for the benchmark assessments are in the same exact location as the OTTs for MSTEP and for NIAMSIS, and the Smarter Balance Program is all here. You would just click, of course, on the ELMBA icon. And then for both content areas, for ELA and
jump the gun.
There is a separate OTT for each grade, so you can do kindergarten, grade 1, grade 2. And notice we even have we've got two grade 2 OTTs. They're the same exact items, but one of them doesn't have the TTS on because not all grade 2 students are going to get that designated support, and one of them does have the TTS on. So if you can predict ahead of time which students might be getting that support, you can have the practice with the appropriate OTT.
And you can see they have the Smarter Balance has OTTs for their interims right there.
Yep.
Jump. Now's my commercial. We're always looking for people to participate. Has anyone ever participated in anything, item writing? I don't want to hear from this group here.
Yeah.
Item writing, I would say item writing is the most challenging. Item writing, item review, data review, and standard setting only comes around sometimes only every few years, so that's can be rare. But where You have the choice of the sketches and the sub fee or the stipend. If you live more than, I believe, 50 miles away, you're eligible for a hotel room. So if you came in the night before, you could get dinner the night before and catered breakfast and lunch. Item, again, always looking for item writing. Now, you caveat is you can't write K items and then be on the team that reviews the K items, right? My joke is that, you know, this is conflict of interest. Oh, this is great. Well, what's worse is that you wrote it 3 years ago. And who wrote this? It's terrible. But we've had people who will write for K2, and then they'd come in and do data review for 3 through 5. Now, all the data review and the standards saying that's in the meeting. There's a training for the item writing, and then you have homework, and you have so many weeks to turn in your items. The others are paid a daily stipend. You get a stipend for coming to the meeting, and then you get once the committee accepts it, you get an additional stipend for each item that gets accepted. Data review, standard setting. Okay. Yes, we're always looking for visually impaired experts and as well as English learners, but I would say the VI people are the hardest people to get.
Especially, yeah, so if you're bias and sensitivity case, that's where we really want to make sure we have a VI representation. We often try to look for ESL representation, particularly for the bias committees, although they are helpful for any kind of committee. And this table here, kind of just illustrates the common opportunities there are for teachers to get involved. I know Kyle already went over them, but you can be an item writer, okay, because as you know, Michigan teachers write the Michigan items, all right? And we'll do item writing for the K2 assessment, we'll do item writing for MSTEP. But Holly, MSTEP is Smarter Balanced. So most of the items in MSTEP are written by Smarter Balanced, which actually some Michigan teachers do contribute to that effort and have in the past. However, as part of the MSTEP exam, there is a portion that are Michigan teacher written items and Michigan only items that don't come from Smarter Balanced. So we truly have teachers writing items for all of the Michigan assessment programs. Yes, and then we have item review. So after the items get written, they'll get processed by me and Kyle. We'll send them to graphics if a graphic needs to get made. You know, they'll get a little bit of review, but then ultimately they get brought to an item review committee. And we always have two of everything. We've got two different kinds of item review committees. We have the content advisory committee, and we have the bias and sensitivity committee. So for that first round, when it's item review, obviously those items have just been written. They haven't appeared in front of students yet. So the content advisory committee will get a group of Michigan teachers around the table, and we'll go through all of the items that got newly developed, and the teachers will give their personal recommendation for every single item, whether they think it's appropriate, whether they're recommending revisions, whether it should live on and become an item that the students may eventually see one day, or whether it should die and never be seen again. This is all up to Michigan teachers. These decisions are made by you guys. And then we also, for those new items, look at those same exact items with a whole different crew of folks, specifically for bias and sensitivity. So the bias and sensitivity committee, their job is to make sure that we are not running into any potential bias or sensitivity issues with those items. So they have a much narrower lens at what they're looking for. However, I will say that other states tend to do item and bias, content and bias kind of together at the same time, and there's some efficiency perhaps in that. Michigan has always had it separated. However, it does ensure you are getting a whole room of folks to come and, you know, make sure that, you know, the item with Maria isn't about buying tacos, right? It seems like it should be so easy. But having that extra check, having all these eyes on it to just look for those things is really valuable. And it's good that the state is so paired with that. And then, after the items that get accepted through item review, they will then become field tested. So if an item gets accepted by the teachers at the committee, then that item will become eligible for field testing, and then it may be selected for field testing. So the first time an item sees the light of day, it actually doesn't count for the student score. The student doesn't know that, but we know that. And that is so that we can do a whole extra check, because if we weren't careful enough the first time, we do a whole extra check and we have another content advisory committee and another bias and sensitivity committee, but this time it's data review. This time students have seen that item, and we don't have to predict, we don't have to guess, well, I think this might be too hard, or I don't think you're going to understand this, or I think that'll be confusing. Now we know, because we have the data. We know how many kids got it right or got it wrong. So we have Michigan teachers come in, and based on the data, to again evaluate these items and make sure that they are appropriate for becoming operational. And once an item is operational, that's when it starts to count towards a student's score. So lots of checks and balances, lots of different committee work, lots of opportunities to be involved. Those of you in the room who have done it before, most people do it more than once. We tend to get positive feedback. Teachers tend to really value and enjoy the experience. If you have any interest at all or know any teachers at all who you might be interested, this is a really, really nice opportunity that I just don't think teachers know about all the time or don't take
advantage. I think one of our members is 20 years.
Yeah,
Melissa.
Yes. We have some veterans.
Yes.
We have some folks who have been doing these committees for many, many, many years. But then every year we have new ones too. And of course, we like a mixture of the board.
Right. Those are the various areas, so we're always looking for, especially from, of course, Northern Michigan, UP, and also Region 3, right, thumb area. So, but yeah, as you can see, we have hundreds of folks from all over the state. I don't know if it's a rumor, but way before I got there, apparently, at one point, if you live way up here, they'd actually fly you down, but those days are long gone. But if you are coming from that far, you're going to get the,
your mileage gets all reimbursed.
Not only your mileage, but you come in the night before, and the meeting ends at Thursday afternoon. Well, you have the choice of spending Thursday night as well in Lansing.
Yeah, we'd like to get the Ubers, so we'll work with you to get you to the meeting.
Spotlight. I hope everyone knows about the Spotlight. It's been on for many years. And I know a lot of work goes into that. I think it goes out weekly, and we take a little bit of a 6-8 week hiatus in midsummer. But call center, last riveting slides here, and there's Holly and I's.
We're such a happy circle.
Yeah.
So again, really no major updates this year as compared to previous years, except for.
No heckling from this group. I'm almost disappointed.
Yeah, you guys are not doing your job. If we have not plugged it enough over the course of this conference, I will just plug it one more time. The K to the ELMBA benchmark assessment, I know that there are other benchmark assessments that can be used at those grades. I believe that there's legislation now where schools have to use some kind of benchmark assessment at K-2. This ELMBA test that we've been producing for many years now is not used as much as we think it should be. And so I just want to plug the real benefits of using the ELMBA as the K-2 benchmark assessment is that it's the same testing platform, right? So as young as kindergarten, students are going to get used to what Insight looks like. They're going to get used to those item types. As you guys saw, it's the same item types. We just use them maybe in different ways or take the bells and whistles away. But that is really important, just that alone. And then also having that predictor to grade 3 MSTEP, that's a huge bonus that you're not going to get using a different K-2 benchmark assessment.
Right.
And we didn't address it specifically in these slides, but the same goes for using the Smarter Balanced Interim Assessment at
right.
grades 3 through 7. Again, that is the same platform, same types of questions, same everything. So if you really want your kids to have a cohesive testing experience in Michigan, If they start taking the ELMBA in kindergarten and then they are doing the Smarter Balanced interims as well as the M-STEP summative, they're going to be able to present this better than us. They're going to know these item types in and out. They're going to know the platform. So just another plug to really talk up the ELMBA. If you are at all interested in using it, talk to who you need to talk to in your district. Really hype it up. It is free. It is the free option. I know that districts will get reimbursed for other options, so they are kind of like being free. But there are just lots of benefits. And if you have any more questions about it, about that, about how you can get your administrators interested in it or whatnot, talk to any of us, and we will do our best to give you some recommendations.